We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
John Tetta! What a strike! What a screamer! Zola! And a fantastic goal! Oscar back in it!
And here's Lippert, lines it up, finds the net. Arsenal in front.
Horrifying Danny Welbeck injury overshadows meaningless draw in Europa League group stage as podcast host is forced to put aside humorous intro. This is the Arsenal Vision post-match podcast. My name is Elliot Smith, and you can block me on Twitter, Yankee Gunner. Yeah, no smug, humorous, or, depending on your perspective, not humorous intro. It really is the story of the game. That is Danny Welbeck suffering really a horrendous injury. The pictures are not ones you want to look at if you can avoid them. Unfortunately, they were sent to me directly, thanks to those of you who did. But yeah, sad day. We also lost Lichtsteiner to a muscular injury. We'll raise plenty of questions about the group stage of this competition. And here to answer those questions, or at least discuss them with me, is Paul. You can find him on Twitter at PauseInMyPants. Hello, Pause.
Little Freudian pause there. Yes, this is Poznan in your pants.
Yeah. Did I say it's Poznan in my pants?
You got all nervous.
Well, look, a lot of things happen in my pants that make me nervous, let's be honest. And also with us
I will not be happening in your pants.
Thank God for both of us.
Clive.
Clive's on Twitter, Clive PAFC. Hello, Clive.
Hello, hello.
Hey, want to thank everybody who joined us yesterday for our live match commentary. Weirdly, some people seem to like it, so we'll probably do it again in the future. If you missed it, you can always go to arsenalvisionpodcast.com/live and listen to our live audio when we do it. You don't have to download anything. You don't need an app. You don't need a sign in, a login. There's nothing. You just stream it right from there if you want. And then we put it up on Patreon as a recording.
You could even vaguely sync it with the game, couldn't you?
The adults are talking. The adults are talking. Yeah. So I want to thank you for listening to that because it was a lot of fun in some ways, and I think we can refine that and do it better. I'm not sure it's a good idea for games that have significance or import about them, but for a game like last night's, it was certainly a good time had by some, and we appreciate you joining us for that. Tim is not here today because he's recording his pre-Watford preview. It's Wolves, isn't it? Yeah. Pre-Wolves preview. He has to know. I don't have to know because I'm not doing one. It'll be up on Patreon later. We want to thank those of you who have signed up and those of you who haven't. We want to thank you anyway because you're listening and we love you for that. And then in the spotlight, Granit Xhaka will be coming to Patreon next week, an entire episode devoted to this polarizing individual, a player who splits opinion is what I'm told polarizing means, says here in dictionary.com. In any event, we have a podcast to do. You'll be hearing briefly about enclosedlingerie.com, enclosed as in it's enclosed in a package, and lingerie as in the beautiful stuff you're going to be getting your wife or girlfriend or partner or whatever it is. Enclosedlingerie.com. They rock. They save marriages. They save relationships, and you need to do it. And you get $35 off when you put Arsenal at checkout. Just something to know about. Anyway, let's start. Let's start with the big news, and that's the injury. And Clive, it is devastating. It's devastating to see this happen to Danny Welbeck. Even putting aside the importance he brings to the squad, just a wonderfully likable player, and a player who is out of contract at the end of the season, making it all the more challenging for him professionally. I want to read to you what Unai Emery had to say, because I think it's kind of touching the way he put it. He said, "It's the worst news tonight, this injury. It's clear that we are with him in these minutes. He is a very good person. His commitment with us is very big. He's helped us with his behavior, with his quality, and with his capacity. It's a very big injury for him, for us, for all people who like and love him as a person." I think that's very well said by a manager still learning the language. And for Danny Welbeck now, it is a question as to what happens going forward. What's your reaction to the injury and what it means for the player and club?
Yeah, there's only one reaction. That's extreme sadness, really. And players do polarize opinion, but I suppose whether you respect his game or not, almost every fan can see that this guy is a nice guy. And when nice guys get hurt, you immediately go to the human side. And he's a human story, really. And he's had a real rough go. You know, he's had a number of injuries that have been quite unusual. You know, he had knee problems, bone problems, and he had like a sort of like a meniscus stroke, you know, ligament problem, just tackling back. And it's so innocuous injuries have taken so many games from him. And the window of an athlete is very, very small when you're in your peak years. And he's lost a couple of years of football due to innocuous injuries. And here comes another, I'm guessing, at 4 to 6 months. And, it's a real shame on the human side for somebody that does not deserve it. And on the football side, I think it's a major, major blow for our squad. To be able to say you've got Danny Welbeck as your third forward is a big thing, and I think it's a major part of Arsenal's efficiency and goals in the area, because we're able to lay power down and speed and presence for the full 90 minutes every game with two strikers on the pitch minimum. And we're not going to be able to do that now. We're going to be reliant on attacking midfielders having impact in the box and having the personality in the box to deliver. And I think it's going to be a major challenge in the multi-competitions we're going to have to approach. And Elliot, I'm looking for silver linings here, and there isn't. What happened last night could potentially impact the Spurs game, December 19th. It'll impact the latter stages of the Europa League, and it's going to impact the Christmas period when we load games up in a small period. And I think this is going to really challenge this consistency that we are developing this season. I am absolutely gutted.
Yeah, it, as a human interest story, it's terrible. As a football story for Arsenal and the player, it is terrible. I think the thing that's so hard is he has so much energy and he does so many things that make the opposition uncomfortable that he is such a loss late in games when we're chasing a game or trying to keep a game and the opposition is tired and his energy is so difficult to deal with. And I'm going to make a comparison that's going to seem maybe a little bit unfair, maybe not generous enough to Welbeck, but he is kind of our Marouane Fellaini. And what I mean by that is he is not the most skillful player at the club. I think it is fair to say that. You know, some people might say that harsh, but I think it's fair. But he is a player that we use, similar in the way to what Mourinho does with Fellaini, who we bring on, and wherever we play him across that front three, he causes problems with his physicality, his burst of pace, his leap, his aerial ability, his strength to hold on to the ball. He's not the most elegant player, but what he can do makes the opposition uncomfortable. They surely don't like seeing him come on late, and I think that's a big loss for us. A player whose physical abilities just create discomfort for the opposition, and whoever winds up taking that role, whether Nketiah gets more playing time as a true number nine, or whether we see Ramsey play more in wide forward positions and substitute roles, or Emil Smith-Rowe gets more time, we lose a lot of physicality and athleticism in losing Welbeck. And I think athleticism is becoming increasingly important at the top level of football, and it's a shame. And to your point, Clive, I think later in the rounds of the Europa League, maybe not semifinal, final, but early group stages, the holiday period, he is someone who would have played a lot, and playing against tired legs in the holiday period, he would have been very tough to handle. That's all academic now. Paul, let me ask you something that may seem callous to discuss at this time.
Not for you.
No, as you know, very little is callous on me. Smooth as a baby's bottom, quite frankly. Do you think that this maybe gives other players pause when thinking about playing for that lucrative Bosman? I mean, it is obviously, look, that is not the priority. I get it, but we're doing a podcast. We discuss things. It is what it is. I mean, Welbeck is now going to be out of contract, coming off a really horrific injury with question marks about what he's able to offer another team. And it may affect the caliber of team that's in for him and the amount of money they want to spend on him. Is this a little bit of a warning for players that a Bosman is not necessarily just, you know, the end of the rainbow?
Yeah, it must be. I mean, Ramsey must look at this and realize he's not the world's most secure physical structure. But his bed is made to lie in at this point. Maybe it impacts a little bit whether he does something at Christmas or not, or etc.
It would probably have to be in January. There's no window at Christmas. I mean, he might spend Christmas with his family, but yeah.
He's actually of African descent because of the rhino, so it's Kwanzaa, you racist bastard.
I think you just made your own bed and you can lie in it. So you just keep talking until the stink wears off.
Yeah, all right. So, but my point is that I'm trying to get to is young men have a tendency to think they're immortal. So I think most of these players will probably, it was always a factor for him. I don't think they'll change their thinking too much. They'll look at Welbeck and say, well, he's injury prone, as young men tend to do. Won't happen to me. But who it may make think a little bit is their agents, because those guys are in their 40s and 50s and stuff, have seen things happen. And, their job is to count the bills. So it probably will be a shot across the bows for players across football for the next 6 to 12 months, but I don't think it'll really change anything. Yeah. So one thing I did want to say about what Clive said, which kind of moved me a little bit, not so much what Clive said, but what I thought about, I moved myself with my thoughts.
Clive's comments weren't moving whatsoever, but what did you think of that was moving and intelligent? That's what we're really curious about, Paul.
I kind of moved myself when I was thinking, while Clive was talking, that one of the nice things, if Danny were kind of to hear what's been said about him here and in other places, is we start off by saying he's a great guy and everything. Well, we would have said that at the end of the summer too. But now what we can say is actually it's a significant loss, which we might think, well, that's kind of, pounds and pence. But it's from his standpoint, in a space of a very short time, he's changed a lot of minds on how important he was to this squad. I think everybody on this pod, because we're like super, super smart, rated him highly going into this season and thought Emery would think he was a real asset once he got to know him. Well, he is a real asset for all the reasons Clive and you talked about. So, yeah, it's from his standpoint, he already knows people like him. The one thing he comes out of this quarter of the season is knowing that again in a short period of time he established himself as a significant, maybe he'll always be a squad player, but he's probably the most useful bloody squad player around. You know, when we discuss who should be in a big four or a top four or top six team, he's probably not a starter for anybody, but as a squad player he's a squad member for pretty much any top six team.
I think going forward, you can do a lot worse than to have real physical specimens who are supremely athletic as guys that come off the bench for you and are options for you in the attack. I think those kinds of players, I mean, because look, you're not going to have Messi and Ronaldo on the bench. You're not necessarily going to have players like Santi Cazorla, who are supremely technically gifted. Those tend to be starters, you know, those exceptional technically talented players. But the real athletes, the just physical specimens who can run and cause problems. I mean, that is an asset to have on the bench. And we don't have a lot of that physicality and athleticism on the bench outside of him. So I think that is a big loss. I mean, Clive, I'll let you come in on that, because then I do have a question I want to get to just about the approach to this competition in general.
Yeah, I think maybe as fans, I'll just throw something out there to get people thinking. I mean, the concept of starting and finishing is changing, right? So Aubameyang is October Player of the Month in the Premier League, and he made one Premier League start. He's top scorer in the league, and he got his goals off the bench. You know, I'm a big rugby fan, and you have, you know, you have eight substitutes in rugby. I know it's quite a lot, but you have starters and finishers, and the finisher's role is almost seen as equally as important as the starter's role. And I think that's where Emery's really benefited and really done well. He's recognised that you need a certain energy at the start of the game and a certain energy at the end of the game. And all the players are part of that. And I think everyone keeps assuming that Welbeck wants to go away and start somewhere. Well, you can have 25, 30 games in a 60-game season playing for Arsenal, or 40 games playing for Crystal Palace. I know which one I would choose, right? So,
Is it the games for Crystal Palace?
No, I choose the games for Arsenal.
I got that wrong. My bad. 50-50.
I'm with you, Clive, because we've also seen people who made the move to a Crystal Palace or whatever for their 40 or 50 games and still get benched. So
Exactly, it doesn't mean anything.
Yeah, he's good here.
He's good, and he's good for the dressing rooms. Obviously, he's well liked within the club. There are people saying he's one of the most popular players of the last 10 years.
Do you think we'll re-sign him?
Years.
I mean, he's not going to have a lot of suitors, would be my guess. Do you think we'll re-sign him on something approaching a reasonable fee?
This injury he will fully recover from. And this is not somebody that's carrying a couple of chins. He's like an Adonis, for Christ's sake, right? Which means he lives perfectly, right? So you saw my camera shot yesterday, and trust me, we're not exactly the same. So
Paul, do you want to make the Chinese phone book joke, or is that beyond the pale for you when it comes to inappropriateness?
Yeah, it's beyond the pale. Right? Okay. So basically. So this is somebody that's come back from two or three major injuries, and he has come back the same, if not better. So he understands about rehab and recovery and how to look after himself. And so he's 27, he's not 37, so he's got plenty of time to come back. The rumours, just from reading Twitter today from people on the medical side like Ben Dinnery say, full recovery, the operation's done, dislocation's back in place, away we go, it's a fracture.
Beautiful.
It's all about ligament damage. You're much worse off with the type of anterior cruciate where you lose maybe a couple of ligaments. They're the ones that are really
tough. Don't say that, Clive. I got to stop you because Paul ripped into me yesterday when I said, let's hope that's a break and not ligament damage. And he said, you fucker, you're hoping for a broken bone for our player.
Yeah, broken bone is clean, right?
Exactly. Thank you.
You can build muscle quickly. With ligaments, you lose something there. When you talk about ligament replacement and ligament trimming and things like that, that's major.
Are you listening, Paul? Are you hearing this?
That's what Oxlade-Chamberlain's wound.
I don't know what sorcery and witchcraft you wafted over him yesterday. Also on the chins thing, I think.
No,
Clive
don't.
I was
expressly saying it so you wouldn't. Please.
No, I'm not going to do that. I was just going to say life can be so unfair how it hands out the talents. Clive's got three chins. You've barely got one, Elliot.
What? I've got a monster of a chin. I've got a masculine chin. Some would say I've been carved out of granite. Not granite shaka. I wasn't like carved out of granite shaka. That's gross. That's yuck. Like if I had pieces of him, like if it was Silence of the Lambs and I had pieces of granite shaka all over my body. So Paul, let's get into the hysterics. I have said before this happened that I just feel this. First of all, let me back up. I think this competition at the group stage is a joke. I'm glad we have it, better than nothing. And I think in the knockout rounds, it can get interesting. And certainly by the semifinal and final, you have something real to play for. But the group stage, the quality of it is beyond horrible. I don't think Sporting had a shot on target. They might have had one. I think we had two.
Can anybody remember a worse performance against us?
No, they offered nothing. And to be fair, for the first half, I thought we offered very little. Now, we will come on to the performance. There's a couple of little things we can talk about with it. But before we do, I mean, Paul, I have always said this is a competition. You just play the kids, and they're probably good enough to get you out of the group, and that's job done. I know you and Clive have both disagreed with me. Given the Lichtsteiner and Welbeck injury, one more serious than the other, obviously, I mean, do you have pause to reconsider whether guys like Aubameyang and Iwobi and Holding and Mustafi should be out there for this competition?
Do I have pause? Yes, today after yesterday. But overall, I don't know. I mean, Lichtsteiner is 35 and something or other, and the hardest working position in Emery's teams tend to be at fullback. And he's not playing that much. He has to play enough to be fit and ready to go. So, if he ain't playing last night, why did he come? Because he's back up to Bellerin. And then on the other side of it, Danny, I don't think he got injured because he's overplayed. I think he always reminds me, he's the one player that kind of hits me as kind of like a thoroughbred, like highly strung physically, where that kind of comes a little bit with his territory, sadly to say. I mean, he's had some unpleasant injuries, and I just think he has that tendency. And yeah, the best way to preserve him, a player like Danny, is to use him only when you need him, but he's still got to be ready to go when he goes. So I don't know what you do about that. I mean, he doesn't want to be sitting on the bench. And I don't mean that from the sense of, he's not mature enough to know when to play or not. I mean, footballers need to play to a certain level. He hasn't played that much, so he's got to be ready when he comes off the bench.
No, that's fair. Yeah. I kind of get it with the guys who are third sub in the Premier League, maybe second sub or below, but like the Aubameyangs, the Iwobis, the Mkhitaryans, the Holdings,
guys who are
essential parts of the first team, you know, regularly in the Premier League.
And are getting plenty of minutes.
Yes,
yeah.
And there's lots of minutes ahead. I mean, I'm not trying to kill Emery for this, and injuries can happen anywhere. I get that. You know, the Welbeck injury is not a factor of being overplayed. The Lichtsteiner injury, I mean, I'll say it, I don't particularly care. I mean, the guy is there to be fodder for these competitions. That's why he's there. So if he gets a hamstring injury doing this, so be it. We look short of fullbacks.
Had he not been bent over doing Emil Smith-Rowe's laces for 1 minute and 20 seconds, he mightn't have done that hammy in.
Yeah. Yep. That's a really, really good point. Well made, Paul. Clive, let's try to get on to the performance a little bit, seeing as how we're 20 minutes in, and in typical Arsenal Vision post-match podcast fashion, we have discussed making this a 40-minute podcast and have yet to discuss the game. I'm going to do the obvious thing here and skip the first half. I mean, are you fine? I literally think the first half essentially didn't happen. I mean, it was, if you showed me the video of it, I would suggest that maybe it was a simulation, because nothing happened. The second half, I thought we actually started to play some good football. Sporting threw themselves to the ground and they kicked us and they were basically, you know, shithousing cunts, but like, it did pull more out of us. And there were some performances I think were creditable. And I want to start with Aaron Ramsey, actually, because being your least favorite player at the club and one that you want to see either flogged or benched, I think we should discuss what ultimately was a pretty bright performance from him second half. Did you see enough from him during that period to think? Now, again, he made a few mistakes towards the end. He tried to overcomplicate it when simple would have been better. Guendouzi was furious with him for missing him late in the game. But was this a glimmer or a glimpse of maybe an improvement from Ramsey that gives you some hope that he can still be usable for us?
He can still be usable. He's a very experienced player, and he's a very talented player. I've been very consistent with him, Elliot. It's always been about style with him. And the reason why I get frustrated with him is he's one of those players that can actually play like he did yesterday, behind the ball, as a two pivot. He can play right in a three. He can play left in the three. He can be one of the three fours. He can play 10. And he is an all-round midfield player. And I actually think that's been to his detriment. And I've said to you, I really feel he needed Emery to come into his career maybe 3 or 4 years ago, when he could actually start to learn tactically about the game. It wasn't about physicality, it wasn't about personality. This is about tactical education about what the role requires. And I've always felt he does things that suit him and his game rather than the team's game. But that's okay, probably, in the previous regime, where individuality was our system. And he was one of those individuals that was fighting with other individuals to be the individual. And that's been the makeup of our team for the last few years. We had very strong individual personalities like Jack, like Alexis, a little bit of Ozil and Ramsey, fighting for a bit of turf. Right, fighting to be the person to lead the team technically, and maybe Xhaka up to a point in a slightly different way. And I've looked and I've thought, you know what, mate, you could do it all. You can be defensively disciplined if you want to be, but you don't hold it for 90 minutes. And we saw a glimpse, but obviously Emery said we wanted to be one of the two, and I thought he really tried to play like Xhaka and Torreira have played and their positioning. I thought he really tried. Now, that's not his game, and he probably felt he had a poor game. But at least we could see where he was standing. At least we could see what he was doing. As Sporting offered no threat at all. He got forward a bit more, which is his right. And he tried to do a few tricks in the box. It's quite interesting. The reaction on social media was very impatient. And that tells you something, that people have now seen something else in centre midfield. People have now seen a competitor in centre midfield. And I think for more fans than probably at the start of the season, the patience is wearing thin on him. And but yeah, I personally would like to see Arsenal move past him, because I'm sick of debating him. I'm sick of debating him online. I don't think he's going to improve. And I think there's so much talent out there in the world that we could bring in with a much greater ceiling that could benefit this team and benefit where we're heading.
I mean, you're going to get your wish. It's, you know, it's only a matter of time now. So it's kind of a moot point.
Look, it's not personal. It's not personal. You know, it's not personal. It's just his football. It's his Arsenal Football Club, right? And I think if you hold someone for 10 years and we're still debating him, it's time to think differently.
Yeah, that's fair. And look, I'm not saying this performance was going to get him on the Ballon d'Or shortlist. I'm just saying, for a player who has looked increasingly ill-fitted in Emery's system and not particularly engaged in what we're doing when he's on the pitch, and I'm not talking about effort or trying, I'm talking about just being sort of clued into his role, I thought the second half of this game, he sort of livened up to it. And everybody did, so maybe it was just that a rising tide lifts all boats. Paul, I'm going to give you an ignominious opportunity here, an ignominious job, and then I'm going to go back to Clive with something of value. Go ahead, Paul. This is your chance.
Is this about the chin?
It's not about my granite, masculine, Adonis-like chin. It is your chance to defend your boy, Carl Jenkinson. Go defend your boy, Carl Jenkinson, Paul. If you missed it during our live commentary yesterday, Paul had his one chance ever to criticize an Arsenal player. Nope. He went to bat for Carl Jenkinson. If you haven't seen a GIF or a video of his attempted volley in this match, you have to run to the internet and find it. I have retweeted it, certainly. It's a beauty. Swing and a miss, but it kind of hits off his foot sideways, goes backwards. It does go the opposite direction of the goal. And what's just amazing is for him to try a piece of skill like that. I love the confidence. I like Carl Jenkinson as an Arsenal fan. I don't like Carl Jenkinson as an Arsenal player. So, Paul, I mean, when he came off, all kidding aside, and Kolasinac came on, that coincided with, you know, our ascendancy and the match improving, because as we previously discussed, the importance of fullbacks. But do you have anything you'd like to add about Carl Jenkinson?
I've been completely misrepresented. Look, it's very fair that I find it, that I have a massive tendency to try and find a way forward for players who wear the red. There's just no two ways about it. I did not exactly represent Carl Jenkinson as having a future at Arsenal. I said perhaps what we were trying to do was get a fee for him. So if that's defending him, if that's a ridiculous overestimate, so be it. Look, I also think he didn't have a totally terrible game. There was he had a terrible volley and attempted shot. Outside of that, he was,
That cross was bad. I mean, you don't think so. I thought it was just stand it up to the back post and let Aubameyang nod it in.
It wasn't
uncovered.
But you thought it was a travesty against football. I mean,
it was a travesty against football, yes.
It was his left foot and he's a right-footed fullback playing for almost the first time ever on the left for Arsenal. So, you know, it was no big deal. He was okay.
What kind of football are you when both of your feet are just for standing on?
Yeah.
I mean, let's move on. I'll give this to you, Paul, because that's not fair. This is a question I was going to direct to Clive, and he can come in on it as well. But real quick, as the game intensified and as we started to have more command of the ball in their final third, not that we were ever under the cosh at all, but we were playing deeper for a lot of the game, and then we started to get the ball into their final third and camp out there the last 20 minutes or so, I thought Guendouzi came to life and really impressed. I just noticed more and more and more that he's a player who seems to be better the closer he gets to goal. And I'm starting to wonder, you know, he can do this central midfield role, but have we maybe missed the qualities of this player? Is there maybe more of an attacking third player in there, you know, a modern number 10 than a 6 or an 8?
He's still in.
Paul's going to take this real quick because I was unfair. I did was beat him up about Jenkinson. You'll definitely get a chance to come in on this.
Sort him out, Paul. Sort him out.
Look, I'll give you the long version, Clive. Look, I think he looks a very interesting number 8, much more than a 6. I think it's a testament to the young man's adaption to Emery's system, that Emery would trust him in all these positions. But to me, he's innate. I haven't seen enough as you have to see a 10 in him yet. Not against it, but I think he's an 8. I think he's very good going from deep and connecting the play. I think he's got good vision. I don't know if he really has the speed and trickery of quick decision making to be a 10. That seems like a stretch, but I'm open to it. So I do think, actually, even with Carl Jenkinson in the side yesterday, and this is not a defense of Carl Jenkinson, but only slightly, we were really actually playing pretty decent football without any great finishing for most of the second half. I did actually go back and look at it, and it does improve with a little age. And it's quite interesting to see Guendouzi and Ramsey pair up. I wouldn't like to see it too often, but against Sporting, they managed to create a coherent pairing. They'll probably get ripped asunder against a bigger, more demanding, more pressing team. And it's interesting seeing Emile Rose Smith up front with
Smith Rowe, but yeah, whatever. You say tomato, I say Smith Rowe. Yeah,
In terms of creating a pressing unit with Guendouzi and Ramsey behind. So although it's a shit game, it creates an interesting problem to make something happen. And it's not as terrible a game to watch second time round as it seemed to be the first time.
All right, Clive, you want to expand on my apparently totally incorrect assertion that Guendouzi could be better closer to goal?
Yeah, you think correct, and Paul's spot on. He's an 8. He's a second midfielder in there. And what I like about him, and we've got it in Xhaka as well, he's got that personality to lead the team. He wants to lead the offensive side, and he wants to get us going. He wants to take responsibility. And Torreira's got the same psychology. He's got that. I'm watching this game, and we were watching it on last night as we were talking, and I'm watching this kid just absolutely really want the victory, putting the ball down and restarts, chasing his pass, trying to make something happen, taking responsibility. You want that in your middle of your team, not at the top end of your team. You want that in the middle. I think his star is rising. And this isn't like, oh, we got a new signing. Let me just talk about it because he's new and he's fresh. I'm projecting forward here. This guy's 19. He's 19 and he's walked into Arsenal Football Club and his personality is dominant. It's dominant in games. He's leading the team. He's more dominant than Mkhitaryan is. He was more dominant than Ramsey, who's seen off other players and been more dominant. He saw off Oxlade-Chamberlain. He saw off Jack Wilshere and he nearly saw off Mesut Ozil. And he saw off Alexis Sanchez. He saw him off, right? I'm the dominant person here. I don't care what you lot are doing. I'm going to do what I'm going to do. Guendouzi's come in, stood next to Ramsey, centre midfield, and I can only see one player. I could only see one player. I couldn't take my eyes off him. And that's down to what he's doing. He is getting the respect of everybody around him, and he's demanding things of everybody around him. And
he grows into every game and every situation, doesn't he?
He does, and he's not perfect, Paul. He's not perfect, but my goodness, he's been at this club 2-3 months. I mean, what is going on here? What is going on to have this level of impact? And I know some of the opposition he's played against has not been the most stellar opposition, but he's still doing it. Now, you think back to some of the other players that we've been watching come in over the last few years, and I don't think they've had a similar personality impact to the team. And I think he's really a shining light for young players to say, this is how you join the club. This is what you do. So I'm looking at Maitland-Niles. I'm looking at Nelson when he comes back. I'm looking at Smith Rowe, and potentially in a year maybe or so, you're looking at young Chris Willock. And these are the next ones off the rank. And then you look at where Iwobi and Guendouzi are now with Torreira, and they are a nice little tight group with Bellerin, similar ages between 19 and 22, 23. And I like them all. I generally like them all, and I think they bring a lot of personality, physicality, speed, technique. I think Smith Rowe, if anything, I think he dropped a little bit lately in the last couple of games. I actually think, I know he's playing the 10 role, and we can sort of hide him in there. If he gets popped, it doesn't matter. And but if he just get near the goal, it's great for his confidence and he's scoring. But I think physically he's found it quite tough. He would have come off yesterday if it wasn't for the injury, I'm sure of it. And Eddie would have come on for him. So he's developing.
I just have the game playing now, Clive. It's at 62 minutes. And I'm watching him walking around the front when he should be you know, 62 minutes into a game playing for Arsenal, he should be hunting down everything he's within 15 yards of, and he's kind of strolling back from an offside position. I'm like, what are you doing, boy?
Yeah, he's learning, mate. He's learning.
He's tired.
Sometimes with my own son, sometimes you've got to learn how to pace yourself. You know, he blows himself out, makes five runs in the first half, then goes dizzy for about 5-10 minutes, and he comes back again. And it's like, I say to him, mate, make a run long, then make a short run inside, you know, cause your man some problems. Don't make the same run. You're on a train track up and down the line. You know, you've got to vary your game. And I think Smith Rowe, he's just out there, and he's busting a guy in front of the whole crowd. And I just think he blew up. And that's fine, yeah. Right? He's 18. You know, last January, I think he was playing against Colchester in the FA Youth Cup and looking very childish. Now he's now 8 months later, 9 months later, he's in the Arsenal first team, Europa League, looking like a man. He's looking strapping and he's developing. And it's all happening for him. I just think we've got to be a bit patient. It won't happen like by tomorrow.
And I think Willock had a stormer against Forest Green like 2 days ago or something. I don't know if you saw anything on that, but yeah, maybe there's life in him. I mean, he absolutely played out of his socks.
Yeah, you know what, Paul? When Willock was the one that was selected ahead of people like Ben Sheaf and Marcus McGuain and people like that, I was thinking, well, what's going on here? I don't see much in him. I don't see it.
Yep.
And I'm thinking, so I started to watch it more closely. And this is about development, how it's so hard to read. I'm thinking, McGuain and Sheaf, they're better than him. Why aren't they getting the opportunity? And then... And I saw that. I've seen some clips this season. He just seems to have gone on a bundle, right? And so next year now we've got a problem again because he's obviously going to be too good for the 23s. So what are we going to do with him? Are we either going to come into the squad or does he need to go somewhere? And it depends what we do with Maitland-Niles. He may have to go somewhere. So let's see what happens.
Okay, hang on. I'm just cross out. Discuss Maitland-Niles. Check. Discuss Smith Rowe. Check. Just tearing up the running order here. No problem. Just give me one sec. Okay, done. Great. So you know what? We'll take that break now. We'll come back with 10 final minutes. We're going to tell you about a really fantastic service that you don't want to miss. So stay with us. We're going to come back with more of this free-flowing jazzercise, this beat poetry that we're doing here called the Arsenal Vision Post-Match Podcast right after this. Okay, time to tell you about our friends at The Enclosed. You can find them on Twitter at The Enclosed, but you can find them on the internet at enclosedlingerie.com. That's Enclosed, E-N-C-L-O-S-E-D, like, you know, it's enclosed in a package. And lingerie, the beautiful gift you give to your spouse, your partner, your loved one, with whom you want to deepen and widen the romantic connection you have. This is really high-end stuff. This is not department store stuff. They have 100% size guarantee, so you don't have to worry about fit. That's taken care of. I am married. I have a toddler. My relationship is a good one. I am thankful for that. But I can tell you that having that child and watching the relationship grow, you really have to focus on being a couple again. And this is the kind of thing that every month reminds you of the romance in that relationship, of the intimacy in that relationship. And it's something that I think is a great gesture of your commitment, your love, and certainly a gift that will stand out. It's not just flowers. It's not the same old thing. And the great thing is, it's every month, so it's something to really look forward to. You should go check them out at enclosedlingerie.com. Enclosed, E-N-C-L-O-S-E-D, lingerie, L-I-N-G-E-R-I-E, I believe, .com. Enter Arsenal at checkout for $35 off the gift of your choice. Perfect holiday gift and the gift of a more romantic relationship. So go ahead and do that now. Enclosedlingerie.com. Enter Arsenal at checkout for $35 off. Okay, we're back. I've got Clive and Paul here. They can certainly weigh in on our sponsor. I will tell you, by the way, I did that sponsor reading off the top of my head and in one take. So I'm really quite proud of that.
I can tell you, Elliot, I was ever so good there. I counted 6 or 7 double entendres that I just had to
They're not double entendres tongue. When you're talking about sexy clothing for your lady. They're entendres. They're intended. It's meant to be
there
about sex and sexiness.
My package, there was the fact that you had a toddler. Oh, don't be putting yourself down, Elliot. I'm sure they have a size for you. It just, it was the gift kept on giving.
So can I make a point real quick?
Yeah.
You actually didn't bite your tongue because you've just gone and thrown them all in there. So mission accomplished, Paul. But seriously, I mean, that's some good extemporaneous marketing work there. Hearkening back to my profession, my chosen profession. Okay, let's do this. Let's spend 8 minutes wrapping up on this game. One player we haven't touched on yet, Paul, is Mkhitaryan. What a difficult player to evaluate. I looked at Scott's by the numbers column, and I felt for him that he had to write a by the numbers column for this. But Mkhitaryan led us in offensive value added, led us in so many statistics. To me, it was one of those games where it's a nearly game for him. It just didn't quite come off. And yet he's always seeming to be on the ball, seeming to be where the action is, and just not quite getting it right. Is that how you see it with him at the moment?
Yeah, and As I said the other day, I mean, I didn't have him down as a confidence player, but maybe there is a confidence thing with him. They said it at United, and maybe the fact that he's been out of the first team for a little bit. But this game and the previous game against Liverpool, he's doing all the right things. He's doing what you want him to do. He's a bit hit and miss, and at the moment he's missing more than he's hitting. But still, he could have been on for an assist had Aubameyang not hit the crossbar, but got it under the crossbar. He did a lot of good things. He was busy, had a few giveaways, careless balls. So, yeah, he's a player that I really like, or really want to like, for us right at this point in time. With Danny out, he's going to be even more important because he's one of... We don't have too many wide players at this point. We really don't have any truly getting behind them forwards beyond Aubameyang and maybe a bit of Lacazette. So he's next up, really. Iwobi seems to play from a little deeper, so he's going to be very important to us. But hopefully that'll add to his confidence by adding to his minutes. So he's at an interesting phase and a very busy period, as you mentioned, coming up. So he'll get the minutes. Hopefully that solves the problem with the confidence.
Do you have any thoughts on Mkhitaryan, Clive? I imagine you do.
Yeah, I think it's all about start points with somebody like him. I think between the three of us, we may have slightly differing views. I think some of that's from the start point by which we view him from. You know, so I haven't got massive expectations upon him. I like the player from a technical standpoint. I struggle to read him. I'm into reading players psychologically, right? So I struggle with him psychologically. But from a technical standpoint and a physical standpoint, and he's very rounded. He's got 2 feet. He's quick. He can work on the ball. He can dribble with it. He can carry it. And also when he can defend. So he is a modern footballer. The only thing is he's a box of apples, right? I'm not sure what you're going to get. You just don't know what you're going to get when you put your hand in. And I think that frustrates people. So, like, you know, he could well be picked on Sunday. He could well be on the bench. I'm not sure he cares either way because I can't get to him. I can't see what he cares about. Right? But when he plays, he does quite well. Sometimes he does really well. He never does really badly, but sometimes he doesn't quite meet your expectations. But then I say, what are those expectations? What are we basing it on? Can you tell me that one stellar performance that he's had that creates a benchmark? Or is he just a decent player? Then you look at the wider package. You look at his salary. Then you think, okay, he's getting close to 180, 200 a week. Are we getting value? Probably not. Is his salary linked to Alexis? Probably yes. So we have this mishmash of a player that drives different opinions. And I think sometimes when people get confused about a player like that, they just say, just move him on, get somebody that I know, understand, create room for somebody else, blah, blah, blah. It's going to be an interesting time for him because I think he's part of the new crew, the new culture of the team, and he seems to be part of that. So some of that could break up this summer quite easily if we're trying to go another direction. So he's one to watch, definitely, with Mkhitaryan.
Yeah, I agree with all that. Let's do this. Let's start to transition towards the end of the podcast. And I think we'd be remiss if we didn't just talk about the Europa League group stage experience now, having a couple of seasons of it. And Paul, I don't think I ever really appreciated how poor the quality of this competition was. I mean, Sporting, I believe, are undefeated and have won all their games against the other teams in this group aside from us. And they have been, in the two games we played them, among the worst sides we've played in a decade. And so,
I mean, their supporters attacked them during the summer. I was surprised our supporters didn't attack them last night. What the fuck was that?
Yeah. I don't know what to say about them other than they are shambles. And I realize, you know, they've lost players and they're a club in transition, but they had no ambition in either game. This competition is not good at the group stage. And I know Tim Stillman, who couldn't be here for this episode, but who was tweeting about the competition, just said, these group stages need to be put in the bin and it needs to be a straight knockout. It sure seems that way. I mean, for you, where do you stand on just the caliber of this competition, certainly at the group stage, and the value of it existing whatsoever?
it's shite. They got to restructure it so that it's meaningful. I mean, I don't know what it is for a team like Arsenal, not to be too snobby. There has to be something beyond Champions League, which has its own issues, and Europa League. I mean, even last year in the knockout stages, it didn't get interesting till maybe the quarterfinal, semifinal stage.
I mean, the Carabao Cup is genuinely better than this. You get to see some young kids. You get to see a team that wants to try to beat you, and you get to pay $10 for a ticket, £10 for a ticket, or £5 for a ticket, whatever it is. I don't know how you're supposed to sell out 60,000 seats for this caliber of opposition and teams that don't care to beat each other. And you know, the only incident in the match is a horrific injury. I don't know how you salvage this.
Yeah, the only thing this competition was ever good for was making fun of Spurs, and that's not very funny at the moment.
No, I mean, it is funny that they don't have a stadium and they play on an NFL pitch and they're going to be in the Europa League momentarily if they get enough points in their group to qualify for the Europa League. Clive, I mean, as far as you're concerned, is this basically the bottom of the footballing barrel?
I think we got away with it last year because we made a lot of money because we were the only team in the Europa League. And so we actually made more money than Manchester United made in the Champions League last season by getting to Europa League semi-final. So we got away with it, but we won't get away with it this year with Chelsea in there and potentially other teams coming down. So the money is really going to be a differential. And that what this is all about, Elliot, it's all about making money in these group games. How can we get fixtures turned over? How can we have, get TV rights? Forget about the fans that pay to go through the door. They might get one decent group game, and that's it. And the rest is all about waiting till the turn of the year when the competition really starts. And we're throwing an extra knockout round in there as well, just to make people work hard. I mean, it's a... And you could say the same for the Champions League on a slightly lesser extent. I mean, some of those groups are not very exciting. Some of them are exciting. So, and we've been in, we've played Olympiacos how many times the last few years? It's not that great, right? So, but it's all about money. It's all about money and positioning for the potential eventual Super League and making sure your brand is out there in the European world. And that's what's happening with football at the moment. So, not exciting, but it's a means to an end, right? Potentially, if you win it, which can be very difficult, we know what that leads to. It leads to the other competition where you can get lots of money for a very average group game. So this is a football problem, not just a Europa League problem.
Okay, well said. So let's transition now to just a quick look at the weekend, and I'm talking just a couple of minutes here, and then we'll say goodbye. Paul, it's Wolves at the weekend. They are a team in England that plays in the Premier League. They are off to a pretty good start to life. In the
Premier
League. You
don't know where they are, do you?
Well, they wander. They're wanderers, right. So they're wherever you find them next. And I know they'll be in London at the weekend. They're from Wolverhampton, is where they're from.
Yeah. Okay.
Clearly. I mean, what more is there to know about Wolverhampton Wanderers than they're from Wolverhampton and they wander? I don't know what else you need to know. How big a test do you expect this to be at home?
Well, hopefully not. I mean, they've been very good, but they've been attacking, as I understand it. I've watched very little of them. So hopefully it's a decent game. We're coming off the Liverpool game. On the other hand, we've had that damp squid of a Europa League game and the Danny thing. But I mean, the crowd really got behind us for Liverpool. If they can lift us again, because we might need a tone set early in the game against coming off the Europa League game. If they can get behind us and Wolves come and play a little football, hopefully we can get some momentum going and keep that energy going. But I would think there's no reason we shouldn't be flying, except against lesser teams, our stats have not been that exciting. And our first halves have been a little slow. So I think that's the most interesting aspect of this game. Have we turned a corner in terms of how much we produce and display in a game and how we start a first half? Because we came at Liverpool like a train right from the get-go, and we pressed up front, as you correctly predicted. So is this a turning point in how we attack all teams that come to the Emirates? Or will we be a little bit more conservative against a lesser team now that the Liverpool game is behind us?
I'll tell you this much. They play with a back three, and if they try that shit against us, they're going to get run. That's not going to work for them at all. Yeah. So, I mean, I don't know if they kind of do it like a flat five at the back, which maybe is a little different, but if they play the 3-4-3 against us when we go with Lacazette and Aubameyang, they're going to get beat to shit. Clive, any thoughts on that?
Hey, yeah, I think Wolves have, sometimes you time it. If we had played them a little while ago when they played Manchester United late September, I think it might be a bit tougher as we were still forming, but they've lost their last three and they're playing us and they have a break, and I think they play Huddersfield after the break at home. So this is a game that they will be thinking, what can we get out of this? Let's have 2 weeks off and let's reset. They were the team that, you know, one of the surprise teams early on. I think they are, obviously they're well funded. They've got a great system going on there with the agent, Ronaldo's agent, his name just slipped me. But yeah, let's see what they do. I'm not worried about them. I think we need this badly. I think we've had a great start, great start to season as a whole. But we've had a couple of little slips lately, you could say, from a point accumulation perspective. So let's get those points back in right now, especially when Man United are playing Man City, for example. We need to make sure we stay ahead of them. And despite Spurs actually struggling to put one foot in front of the other, they keep stealing wins, and they stole a win from Wolves in the last game. So I think this is very important for accumulation. Have a 2 week break. A lot of our players don't go away, although I saw Leno get called up for Germany. So a few more are getting called up, but then we go into the real crunch of season after international break.
I'm not too worried about a goalkeeper getting called up, though. I mean, that's the one position where you think the extra games and the confidence of being an international could help him. So,
yeah, good for him. Yeah,
yeah, exactly. I mean, he's not going to be running around much. Let's leave it there. If you're on Patreon, you get Tim's match preview, which would be a damn sight better than what you just heard. If you're not on Patreon, get on there and get that. Otherwise, you can just stick with this garbage that passes for analysis. Jesus Christ. No, I'm kidding. It was really good. It was really, really good, and I'm really proud of everybody. Good job by all of us for coming on here and diligently doing a podcast after the absolute pile of steaming shit that was the Europa League. And there's two more games in the group, and we have to do podcasts for both of them. Oh, boy. Anyway, we love you. We really do appreciate you. We are so thrilled to have you, and we in no way were just trying to half-ass this podcast. Paul's on Twitter, Paws into my pants. Thanks, Paws.
Woohoo!
Clive's on Twitter, ClivePAFC. Thanks, Clive.
Thank you very much.
My name's Elliot Smith. Give us a 5-star review. Write nasty things about us in the comments. You can block me on Twitter, Yankee Gunner. Sign up on Patreon if you would be so kind, and you will get great content, including In the Spotlight, Granite Shack, and next week. Don't want to miss it. If you don't want to sign up, we still love you, and we appreciate you, and thank you. Thank you. Thank you. We'll try to sneak in a halftime show maybe for the Wolves game at the weekend. No promises, but certainly something we'll target. And please visit our friends at enclosedlingerie.com before Paul gets a word in edgewise. We love you. We will talk to you after Arsenal 10, Wolves 0.